Welcome to the Vanderbilt University Center for Teaching podcast, part of the center's efforts to cultivate dialogue about university teaching and learning among faculty, students, and staff. I'm your host, Derek Bruff, an assistant director here at the Center for Teaching. This episode begins a new series here on the podcast, a series focusing on time-efficient teaching. Faculty at a research university like Vanderbilt must balance a number of competing demands on their time, including teaching, research, and service. For this series, we're interviewing senior faculty members at Vanderbilt and asking them to share ways they teach effectively while making good use of their time. In this episode, we feature an interview with Todd Giorgio, professor and chair of biomedical engineering. In the interview, Todd describes time-efficient ways to approach office hours, in and out-of-class assignments, and class preparation. Todd, what are some methods that you found helpful in teaching effectively, but also in a time-efficient manner?
Well, that's a great question because, as we all know, time management is a really valuable skill, and it's a hard one for young faculty to just know. It's a learned kind of activity, and so there's a lot of trial and error to trying to get that balance just right. And one thing that I found, like most faculty, I try to keep an hour's worth of office hours for every course hour I teach. And so in terms of sort of office hours, having those 3 hours a week available to students, the initial plan and what I did when I started as a faculty member would be to have that office hour completely overlapped with our normal course schedule. So for example, I might have an office hour from 9:10 to 10 o'clock on Wednesday mornings, which would just completely overlap our course schedule. But I found that that was relatively inefficient for students because if they had a course during that particular hour, they couldn't find me. And so one easy thing to do is to move those office hours to straddle two different teaching periods. So you might make it from 9:30 to 10:30 on Wednesday. So if a student has a course on one or the other, at least there's an opportunity for that. Hey, I need a little help on this one homework problem that takes 5 minutes. They don't need the whole hour, but they have more opportunity to meet with you. And then if you go one step further, you might even consider taking that three-hour block of time and instead of breaking it into three pieces, having it, say, in two 90-minute sections, which from an efficiency point of view for the faculty member is good, and from the student perspective probably makes no real difference at all. And then that sort of naturally forces you to break over two or three classroom periods. And what this does from the point of view of the faculty schedule is it maximizes the opportunity for students to come see you when you're ready to see them, and it minimizes the interruptive, I know, Professor Giorgio, but I have this question. I couldn't see you during office hours because I had class, right? And so this gives everyone a better chance to have a good interaction at the time you're sort of expecting that interaction to happen. And I found it works great. I don't think there's any downside to it at all. The students seem to love it, and certainly it's good from the scheduling perspective. And it's just something you don't think about because you tend to be locked into the course schedule in terms of the thinking about your own schedule.
Mm-hmm. Can you say a little bit more about the interruptive aspect and why that can be not so efficient in terms of time use?
So for many of us on campus, another one of our academic obligations is writing, whether that's book writing or scientific manuscripts or grant proposals. And at least for me, I know I need sort of focused, uninterrupted time so that I can have a train of thought and follow it out and really develop a number of hypotheses and think through all of the consequences of a particular line of thought and then put those down on paper. And it's hard to do that in a very effective way if you only have 10 minutes or 15 minutes between interruptions to do that. And so by trying to manage all of those student visits into a known block of time, I think it's a better experience for the students too, because if they have an emergency that they need to see me, not during office hours, I'm more likely to be focused on whatever I was doing 30 seconds ago and maybe not so focused on the fine nuances of the question they're asking. So they get a better experience when I'm prepared for them, and it also helps my other parts of my academic life to be able to focus on them at the right time, too.
Mm-hmm. Are there other methods that come to mind as ways that you make good use of your time when it comes to teaching effectively?
I think the other thing that I learned mostly through VANTH is about...
Can you say just briefly what VANTH is?
Sure. So VANTH is a National Science Foundation supported engineering research center that's devoted to understanding how people learn and using those that knowledge to develop new materials and methods specifically for engineering and even more specifically biomedical engineering education. And one of the things I learned as a participant in the VANT ERC was the need for formative assessment, and I think most faculty have an innate understanding that that's important, but it's really sort of reinforced through more classic, traditional learning theory. But it's hard to do. I mean, we do that, say, through homeworks, right? You assign some homeworks, the students do the homeworks out of class, and they come back and they get some feedback about their knowledge, their understanding. But one of the ways I found, and that's a rather time-consuming process for everyone, and I found that there are some simple tools you can use in the classroom to help give the students that formative assessment that makes it more visible to them right then while you're doing lecture, plus it takes the burden off the teaching assistant off you in terms of grading a lot of homework. And so you can have little activities that allow students to work together in small groups. They can come to some conclusion, and then immediately afterward, right in the classroom, you can say, well, did you think about this and think about that, and what was your answer? And they get that same formative assessment kind of information. Most of the time, you can see it on their faces like, oh, I didn't think about that. But they understand that they don't have the whole story yet, and it kind of breaks the cycle of the drudgery of doing the homework. Homework's still, to some degree, important, but you can off-cycle some of that homework and some of the effort that goes along with it to something that I think is more valuable in a way, which is that immediacy of, yeah, I didn't get it. And this falls into the category of things like the personal response system and turning point kinds of things where you
clickers.
Get, yeah, clickers, where you get classroom-based kind of feedback immediately, and that's good for the instructor and good for the students. And that, I find, is a time saver overall, though it takes a little bit of time to set those up.
So my experience with clickers is that, and other similar in-class formative assessment techniques, is that they allow me to respond to maybe a misconception or a difficulty the students are having, one that's possessed by a lot of students, and I can respond to that all at once, as opposed to, say, on a homework cassette where I've got to grade 20 different papers, and they may have this exact same problem, but I've got to look at 20 different things and give 20 different sets of feedback,
right,
even though that feedback may be basically the same feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So is that kind of what you're talking about?
It is. That's really a good sort of example of where you can gain some efficiencies. And actually, although this isn't necessarily in the context of getting efficient, but those clickers, as I'm sure you've also found, have another real value, and that is sometimes you'll find students who think that their misperceptions sort of aren't that bad, or they aren't far off the mark, but sometimes there'll be cases where, you know, 80 or 90% of the class will have a good understanding, and there'll be that 5 or 10% who are not getting it, but they have the misperception about their misperception, that they really think, oh, I've got it, it's okay, but they can see in class, yeah, I see most of my colleagues are doing better than I am, and that's kind of a wake-up call, and it's uncoupled when you do homework, because they'll sometimes share homework grades, and they'll say, oh, well, I got a bad homework grade, but I'm sure everybody got a bad homework grade, right? But in this case, you know, there are lots of people who didn't get bad homework grades in terms of their response to the immediate questions in class. And so it makes more visible, again, the level at which you are having difficulty relative to the peers in the class. And I think that's important, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen really good response for people who have, students, learners who have come in and said, I didn't realize that I was missing so much relative to the others, and oftentimes this class of learner doesn't figure that out till the first exam. When the average gets posted and they think, well, I got a 50 and that's okay, and the average is a 75, and they think, well, that's not so okay, but now you're already one
They don't have to
down.
Wait 4 weeks to find that out.
Exactly.
Right. So do you find yourself sometimes constructing and grading fewer homework assignments because of what you're able to do in class?
Yes, there's no doubt. We do less homework. And again, this is, I guess, more of a personal philosophy for students who are in the freshman and sophomore years. I tend to still have a fairly significant amount of homework. But as we progress up through the juniors and the seniors, I think more of the responsibility gets put on the student to do the learning outside of class without the sort of double check of, did you get your homework in? You know, is it all here? It's pretty clear that that has to be done if you're going to be a success in the course. And by the time you're a junior, I hope you've come to understand that. But when we do, when I do sophomore courses, which I haven't done in a few years, I do tend to still have the every week or even more frequently homework assignments. But by the time I have seniors and I had a senior class last year, the homework was very irregular. I'd make assignments, but we would only grade one out of every two or three. Mm-hmm. And so maybe there would only be, in the course of a semester, there might only be six graded homeworks or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of preparing for class, you mentioned having some activities, some formative assessments in there. Does it take a while to prepare a class like that?
It does take some time to think about it, but I think there's some value added because it reinforces to me as the instructor what it is I'm trying to get the students to do. And so I find myself often in the trap of, say, following a textbook and saying, well, first we're going to do A, and then we're going to do B, and then we're going to do C, without really probing sort of a little deeper for myself, what am I really expecting the students to be able to accomplish at the end of this session or this week that they can't do now? And coming up with these formative assessment ideas sort of reinforces what you're really asking the students to understand, and it also helps sort of refine the lectures and sort of make sure they're focused and on topic. And I think that there's some efficiencies to be gained in there, too. Although, you are right, the first time you do these, it takes some time to come up with the questions or the activities, and it takes some time to set up the technology if you're using Turning Point. And sometimes, you know, analyzing that stuff afterward, the post-mortem the day after or the hour after, takes some time, too. So there's some investment there. But overall, I think it's probably a time saver. And it's certainly a better experience for the students, which is probably more important than anything else.
One reason I ask is that in the literature it seems pretty common that a lot of junior faculty, those who haven't taught a lot of courses, tend to spend a lot of time preparing for lecture. They'll spend hours and hours gathering information and making sure they understand every detail of a particular piece of content so that then they can lecture on that material to their students. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like in your classes, you wouldn't lecture 100% of the time anyway, and so I wonder, you know, what effect that has on preparing to, you know, cover, address, facilitate some class session on new content. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if there, for at least in the kinds of things I teach, whether there's a real difference there. I think I still tend to prepare fairly extensively because even if you have some small group activities, which means you're not at the whiteboard, writing down the equation of motion of something. But you still have to, in some ways, be more prepared for tangential questions. So students will, if there's a brainstorming component to the formative assessment and some student asks, well, how about this? You want to make sure you know how that ties into whatever the topic of the day is. And so there's a little bit more work in that way, too. Although, again, as you become more expert, there's less need to explicitly seek that information because it's more aligned with your own skill set.
I'm also gathering that if you are a little more focused about your learning goals for your students, looking at not just that piece of content but that week or that module, and mm-hmm. saying, what skills and knowledge do I want my students to get out of this, then there may be less temptation to cover every single detail and focus instead on the things that are really more important.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. And it's also true that, you know, especially in biomedical engineering, which is a very broad sort of subject matter, if you tried to teach every bit of the entire discipline in 4 years, you know, you'd have to do 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week kind of instruction. And so sort of by nature, you've got to pick and choose according to the discipline. And so that does reinforce that kind of what are the biggest picture items and what kind of activities can you offer students that will give you some insight into something that you're not going to address explicitly, but will give them some flavor for it, teach them how to learn about it so that they can be more independent when they're at work and need to know something about this thing that was only sort of peripherally addressed in class. I always tell my students, you know, that they have to do that. They have to be able to solve problems on their own and seek new information and figure out how it all integrates together, because 10 years from now, when their boss asks them to work on a new project, they can't call me to get some help. They're going to have to do it on their own or know where to get more help from their own set of resources. And so that's one of the objectives, of course, is to help students learn how to learn. And that covers the kinds of topics that you can't cover explicitly in class for a variety of reasons.
Right. And because of that, you end up placing a little more responsibility on them in appropriate ways, in developmentally appropriate ways, which can, in some ways, lighten your load a little bit because you are asking a little bit more of them in ways that will really help them with their learning and with their careers.
I think that's true, and I think that the kind of classroom environment we're talking about here, which is not just devoted to 97% lecturing, also tends to be, by nature, more interactive, and I think most learners get more out of that. They're more engaged and more sort of awake, if you will, about what's happening, and I think that even if you're reducing the total content a little bit, the mastery of what does get taught is higher, and that's probably equally, if not more, important. So I think that's a good trade-off. I guess there's an extreme, you know. You could just talk about, you know, very peripheral things, but so there's a balance. But I do think that is an advantageous kind of approach for making sure the students are lifelong learners, giving them what they need in terms of specifics, and kind of having a life outside of the classroom as well to do other things.
That was Todd Giorgio, professor and chair of biomedical engineering, on the topic of time-efficient teaching. I would like to thank Todd for taking time out of his schedule to speak with me. In the show notes for this episode, you'll find links to VANTH, the Biomedical Engineering Education Research Center Todd mentioned, as well as links to resources on clickers and other classroom assessment techniques. If you have any comments or questions about this episode, please visit our blog, located at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/CFTpodcast, and let us know your thoughts. We're interested in hearing your strategies for effective yet time-efficient teaching. Vanderbilt instructors interested in discussing any aspect of their teaching are invited to call the Center for Teaching at 322-7290 to arrange a meeting with a CFT teaching consultant. We're glad to help you reflect on and explore the various choices you make as a teacher and to connect you with resources you'll find useful as you design, implement, and assess learning experiences for your students. I've been your host, Derek Bruff. Thanks for listening.